You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
And welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday, October 11th, 2024. Grandpa Dan streaming with you, RadioAlbion.com, wrapping up the work week. Hope you get the weekend off. And whatever your situation, I'm glad you're joining us for this installment of the Daily Nationalist. I thought today we would discuss a little bit about stopping and stepping back. We're going to take an inventory. We're going to take an inventory of how we've got multiple conflicts going on in the world. War takes on many different shapes and different forms. And of course, there's always just a ton of propaganda. I thought we'd dig through that, but because I've seen people post on the internet. And of course, you know, a lot of people don't seem to grasp, you know, what war even is and, you know, how to gauge, much less if you don't understand the concept of what it is and what people are trying to achieve. You can't throw around terms like this side is winning or this side is losing. This side has already lost. This side has already won. If you don't understand what these different factions, these different nations, whatever, these different people are trying to even actually achieve, you're not going to understand, you know, how it's going. Now, obviously, while a conflict is ongoing, you can't say definitively one side has won because the conflict is ongoing. It ain't over until it's over, as they say. But you can, while the conflict's ongoing, step back and say, how's it going? Now, again, this subject tends to get flooded out because people get propagandized. Any news story, for instance, concerning what Israel is doing in the Middle East, if you read a news story that allows comments, you're 100% guaranteed it's flooded with Hasbro. I mean, they're just the Israeli Internet Defense Force is out, well-funded, in full force, and you will see the same lines repeated over and over again. So you have shills, you have bots, but then a lot of times you'll see people and they just spew things out in utter ignorance because they don't even understand. You know, I see a lot of people, especially, I guess I can't speak for people in the rest of the world, but like Americans in particular seem to view foreign policy and war as though it's akin to getting into some sort of barroom fight. They'll be like, well, why don't they just jump up and you know, just launch everything they've got at these people? They've insulted them. Well, you're not at the honky-tonk on Saturday night and some guy started flirting with your girl in front of you. War is much more complicated than that. War, I thought, and I'll probably use this for the title of the show, Carl von Clausewitz, one of his famous lines is something along the lines of, it gets quoted, the translation gets done in different forms, but war is the continuation of policy with other means, or you can think of it as politics or diplomacy, however you want to look at it, war, but if we use the quote, war is the continuation of policy with other means. War is not the end of diplomacy. War is not the end of politics. It's the continuation of politics. It's just adding another factor. A good example of how lies get spread, propaganda gets spread, and the truth gets buried. But the truth is, war is the continuation of policy with, not by other means. A lot of people will quote that as by other means, as if you've abandoned this and now you're doing this. With other means is actually a much more accurate translation. The Russians they very much adhere to this view. Now, if you look at the Ukraine conflict as an example of this, where Russia went in to liberate the Donbass and go into the Ukraine, they did all of this diplomacy for years leading up to the Minsk agreements and things you all, I'm sure, already know about and are familiar with. And none of those things worked. And so they added this other means. I mean, you think about, okay, what do they want? No Ukraine and NATO. That's their number one thing. And they want them to stop attempting to kill the people in the Donbass. You know, you start with no Ukraine and NATO. They wanted Ukrainian neutrality. Well, that doesn't get anywhere, so they add this pressure point. Okay, they send their military in, and of course, at the early stages, they used a lot of private military, the Wagner group and such, and they try to add this other thing, and it almost worked. The Ukrainians were ready to sign a deal in Turkey, and then Boris Johnson showed up and told them they weren't allowed to do that. But when you see this, you can see the clear carrying out of policy, diplomacy, politics with other means. They say, we want Ukraine to be neutral, and they get told, no matter what you offer, we're not going to do that. So then they add this pressure point. Okay, well, we're going to send our military in and force you, you know, to add this pressure point. And again, it almost worked, but outside forces, you know, had a different plan. Now, that is really the continuation today of the Ukrainian operation, you know, the conflict with Ukraine and Ukraine with Russia. Is they're still trying to continue to pursue this policy. You can't say, oh, one side has won or one side has lost. You say, well, what are they attempting to gain? Russia's number one goal, Ukrainian neutrality, and to protect the Eastern republics. Well, you know, they're working towards that. Now, as an example of how this gets twisted with propaganda, virtually every American media story will always reference it as Russia's unprovoked full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Now, that is bullshit. It's just observably and recognizably BS. It's not unprovoked. There's many provocations leading up to it. Russia simply wanted this neutrality. Again, this is just politics. This is just policy adding another factor. They're trying to pressure NATO to back off on this Ukrainian, you know, on Ukraine being a part of NATO. It's not a full-scale invasion. If it was a full-scale invasion, you know, foreign diplomats, foreign presidents, prime ministers wouldn't fly in and out of Kiev on a regular basis for photo ops because there would be bombs and missiles constantly landing in Kiev. So that is just absolutely silly. But they frame it this way because they want to propagandize their audience that, you see, Russia, this means Russia's losing. Russia wanted to full-scale invade Ukraine, and see, they're not in Kiev yet. That means they're losing. But it's policy with another factor added into it. Their goals have remained unchanged. Now, I say they remained unchanged. They're going to shift. At the early outset of this, they were willing to let Ukraine keep that Donbass area with autonomy. That was what the Minsk agreements were about. You know, now they've gone this far. That's off the table. If it goes far enough, Odessa is going to be off. The Crimea was off the table from the get-go. You know, so as this drags on, yes, their demands are going to shift a little bit, but their overall policy, what they're striving for, and everybody knows, everybody involved knows what it is. You sit there and say, well, they're losing, or this side is winning. Because you say, you have to look at, well, what are they, you know, what are they trying to achieve? What is the political goal? Because that's how you judge, you know, which side is winning, which side is losing. Now, I want to shift this because I didn't really want to talk about the Ukraine on that matter. But I wanted to shift this and look at what Israel is doing. That is kind of what I wanted to make the focus. And we'll stop, or rather, I'm going to stop. We're going to use this show to stop and take an inventory and say, well, how's it going? Again, you can't say it's over because it's an ongoing conflict. But how's it going? How's it going for all the sides involved? let's start off with the main focal point right now, which is Lebanon. And where Israel is at in its conflict with Lebanon. Now, people, I see a lot of people spouting off, writing different things on the internet. And they'll say, oh my gosh, you know, look, you've had the killing of many of the targeted killing of many Hezbollah commanders, including Nasrallah. You've had all these bombings, and people see these pictures. And again, people see a picture of all these bombs dropped on an apartment building, and it's leveled. There's a whole city block that's leveled, rubble, and they'll say, oh my gosh, Israel is kicking Hezbollah's ass. They're losing something awful. My gosh, Israel has got them on. They're in trouble. They're in trouble. But you see, again, bombs blowing up are relevant, and we're going to get into why that is, why I believe that is. Now, I'm not a geopolitical expert, though we leave that to Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson here in Radio Album. But some of these things to me are so self-evident, you don't have to be a geopolitical expert to understand. Again, when you come back to war is the continuation of policy with other means. Always remember that. They're trying to achieve something. What is Israel trying to achieve in this conflict with Hezbollah? Well, Hezbollah began attacks over the border into Israel and drove those Israelis living there, the settlers in that area, out. And they stated clearly they weren't going to let them come back until Israel stopped the genocide in Gaza. Hezbollah's side, this was their goal. They fired these rockets in that area. The Israeli settlers have to flee, and their goal, stop the genocide in Gaza. They made it very clear. If you stop the genocide in Gaza, we will stop doing this, and your people can come back to their homes and come back to their towns, their settlements, or whatever. You know, that's Hezbollah's goal. Well, obviously, Israel hasn't stopped the genocide in Gaza. Now, Israel's goal, their policy, is they've got to send these people back. It looks bad. And remember, regardless of the way they act and the lip service they get, every government needs legitimacy. When your own people have to flee their areas as refugees within your own country and you're not doing anything about it, it breaks down your legitimacy. They've got to be able to send those people back. Now, they attempted to negotiate with Hezbollah. This isn't widely publicized because they have to feed the masses this retarded narrative about Hezbollah evil terrorists doing evil things. But the reality is they were trying to negotiate with Nasrallah to stop doing that. They offered him money and different concessions and whatever. And Nasrallah would not budge on, no, you're going to stop genocide in Gaza. Then we will stop. He would not budge on this. So the negotiations, the political negotiations came to a standstill. Israel has now added this other element. Remember, it's the continuation with other means. Bombing, they killed Nasrallah. They did the whole pager attack you're all well aware of. They did the pager attack. To use a crude term, they shot their entire wad. They did the pager attack. They've decapitated a lot of the command structure. They dropped bombs. They've dropped buildings. And then again, people that don't understand will look at that and say, Israel's winning. That means Israel's winning. They're blowing up more stuff. That means they're winning. I was thinking of Rush Limbaugh. He had a quote, something along. He used to say, you know, whoever blows up more of the other people's stuff and kills more of their people wins. And that is like one of the most dumbass statements for somebody to make. How does somebody get so rich and have, when he was alive, have such a reach when they obviously don't even understand basics? It has nothing to do with that. What determines who wins, quote unquote wins, is who achieves their policy aims. If these aims can be reached, if two sides can reach an agreement that both can reach their goals without war, they're not going to go to war. Again, this isn't a barroom fight over, you know, my wounded honor. They have goals. They have policy they're trying to enact. Israel needs to get these people back to their areas to protect their own legitimacy and their longer term goals. They bombed. They did all this thing. I mean, that whole thing with the pagers, that took decades to set, probably to set up and get in place. They set all of that off. Why? Not because that is winning. The goal was to sow enough chaos. Let me tell you something. Their goal is to push Hezbollah, because Hezbollah refuses to stop unless they stop in Gaza, which they're not willing to do. So now Israel's policy, they're trying to achieve their goal, is to push Hezbollah back. They're not looking to take over Lebanon. That's not what they're looking to do. They know they can't do that. What they are looking to do is to push Hezbollah far enough back where they are unable to prevent the Israeli people from coming back and living where they were living before. They're trying to achieve the same policy they were doing before with negotiations. Now they're trying to add this other element and force them to do so. The bombings, the pager attacks, killing Nasrallah, killing all of these different commanders, blowing up all of this stuff, that's only a part of what they've got to achieve. You cannot do what they want to achieve with that. I don't care how much bombs you drop. We'll get into that here in just a sec. I don't care how many bombs you drop. If your goal is we're going to push them back so that now they cannot prevent us from sending our people back there, to do that, you're going to have to send ground forces in. You can bomb all day and it doesn't matter. It's impossible to stop them from still lobbing missiles over there. They just keep moving around. It's like trying to kill an ant bed with a sledgehammer. I mean, you can kill ants, but the ant den is still going to be there. You've got to send ground forces in. So Israel doing this, the pager attack, dropping these bombs, killing so many members of the command structure and Hezbollah, this was to make the next step, which is sending ground forces in, hopefully to give it a greater chance of success. When Israel announced they were getting ready for a ground invasion of Lebanon, you had all these people running around going like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they're doing this. It's like, what else do you think they're going to be doing? Their policy, they've stated this, their policy is to push Hezbollah far enough back to where they can send the Israeli settlers back into that area. And you know, so they can go back home, because it looks bad on them. They got to keep legitimacy at home. You can't sit there and tell your population you're this most powerful military and all able to do this, and your own people are fleeing within the country as refugees. They've got to push them back. And the only way you're going to do it, you're not going to do it with air power. You're going to have to send men with guns and tanks. You could push ground forces in to literally push your opponent back. That's what you got to do. And now they have done that. Now, for Hezbollah's side, they know this. You see, you get into the thinking behind this versus this emotionalism. You see people trying to be all emotional about these conflicts and, oh my gosh, look at this bomb. Maybe we went off and they killed these guys. They're losing. These guys are winning. Hezbollah knows this. Basic Sun Tzu, you want to fight your enemies when you're strong and they're weak. Hezbollah knows this. People say, why didn't they launch all the rockets they had at Israel? Because launching rockets and missiles, it's essentially, you know, a form of air warfare. You know, not quite the same as using planes, but you're using aerial warfare. And Hezbollah knows they're weak there. They're always going to be weaker in that arena than Israel is, because Israel has unlimited weapons and supplies from the U.S. As long as the U.S. doesn't completely run out, Israel is going to always be in a stronger position in that arena than Hezbollah is. Hezbollah's bread and butter, where they're strong, is their ground game. So, of course, Hezbollah, people are like, why didn't Hezbollah? Boy, it looks like Hezbollah is awful quiet. Hezbollah is sitting there waiting, because Hezbollah also knows that Israel, to achieve their policy, is going to have to send ground forces in, and that is where Hezbollah is strong. I've read some, and they have, Israel has, unsurprisingly, sent their ground forces in because you got to physically push these people back. I've read reports where Israel, in some cases, has managed to make it roughly 700 meters within the border, and they are stopped. People look at pictures of blown up buildings and say, oh my gosh, Israel's teaching them a lesson. No, Israel's policy, they have got to physically push these guys far enough back to where the settlers can come back. When you made it 700 meters and you have stopped and they are taking casualties, and in some of the reports I've read, and these are always going to be fudged one direction or the other, Israel sit there and say, you know, 1.5 men have been injured. That's it. And the other side's going to say they've killed 6 million of them. You've got to kind of just wade through it all and kind of make, but they're taking casualties. In some reports, it looks as though individual units are taking very heavy casualties, because this is Hezbollah's bread and butter. This is where they shine. They're not going to shine in a lobbing missile exchange back and forth, and they know this. They're just biding their time. They're just waiting. Because at some point, Israel, to achieve their policy, has no choice. No choice but to send ground forces in. If they're going to achieve their stated policy, and this is a public state policy, to push them back to where the settlers can go back. Hezbollah's waited, and now they're doing what they do. They set up these ambushes, the Israelis roll into them, and they cut them off, and they've got them in a kill zone. They train for this. These guys are probably some of the best in the world at what they do. Again, it doesn't matter how many fantastic pictures you see of buildings being blown up, hospitals, schools being bombed by the Israelis. That does not mean they're winning. You have to look and say, what are they trying to achieve? Meanwhile, in Gaza, you look at Gaza, it's been leveled. One of their stated goals, their publicly stated goal, is to defeat and destroy Hamas. That's their publicly stated goal. I think it's pretty clear if you read between the lines. Their unpublicly stated goal is to push all of the Palestinians out and take that land and develop it, turn it into resort property and whatnot. That's their they're not publicly stating that goal, though some people have said this would be great. Like, we could put a resort here if these filthy Palestinians weren't here. But their publicly stated goal is to defeat and destroy Hamas. Now, they have leveled practically, if not literally, every square inch of Gaza. But Hamas is still there. You look at the devastated landscape and say, boy, I see idiots and shills saying, you know, oh, they've learned a tough lesson. Israel's goal is to destroy and defeat Hamas. Hamas is still there. So they have not won. Now, their unstated goal of wiping the people out and pushing them out has been partially achieved, but it has not been achieved. If they want to push some people out, those people out completely and develop that land, which I think is one of their goals that they do want to do, as long as Hamas remains, it doesn't matter if they push 95% of the Palestinians out. If you have the 5% remaining Hamas, they're not going to be able to start developing, and they have not won. It looks like it's like, my gosh, they're wiping these people out. They've leveled the landscape. There's utter destruction. People are dying in droves. But it has nothing to do with their goals, their policy of defeating and destroying Hamas, and then pushing all of these people out. You can see where those two go hand in hand. If Hamas didn't exist and these people were just there rounded up like cattle, it would be a pretty easy thing to push them completely out. And then they could develop a resort property or build apartments or whatever it is they're wanting to do there. Hamas is what's standing between that goal, you see. So they wind up with several goals here. Yes, they got to defeat and destroy Hamas so that they can officially ethnically cleanse these people out and develop a resort property. But Hamas is still there. And it does, as long as Hamas remains in any way, shape, form, or capacity, you're not going to be able to start bulldozing buildings and building a resort, because there's always going to be a guy slipping out of a tunnel and setting an explosive on your bulldozer and blowing you up. You're not going, nobody's going to come to your resort when they know there's a chance they could get shot or blown up. To achieve that, they've got to literally wipe them out. And it was almost an impossible goal to begin with because of the way Hamas has dug in. So even in Gaza, Israel has not yet achieved their policy goals. You want to stop the genocide? If you want to stop the genocide in Gaza, all they would have to do is Hamas would come out and say, well, we're going to surrender and we'll flee across the border into Egypt with all of the Palestinians. And I can guarantee you 100% with all Israel's bluster about Hamas are evil terrorists and we'll never discuss anything. If Hamas came out and announced, if you'll stop, we'll leave, they would stop because they're just looking to achieve that goal. They have not. They have not achieved that goal. And now they've opened up this other front in Lebanon. And no, they have not achieved their policy, their goal there. Now, they may eventually be able to do that or not. But you cannot sit here and say, oh, they're winning because they're blowing up more buildings. No, what they're trying to achieve is push Hezbollah back so those people can go back. That has not happened yet. And they're not making much progress. Now, again, you're going to get propaganda. Everybody's going to say their side's doing great. But I think one of the tells that the Israeli ground invasion is not going well is the Western media silence on this topic. If the IDF had rolled in there and Hezbollah, you know, in utter chaos because their command structure had been attacked again, you go back to the bombings, the assassination of Nasrallah, the pagers going off and killing people. That was not winning. That was to set up a better chance for the ground invasion to work. The idea being Hezbollah would be in utter chaos so that when Israel sent the ground forces in, they wouldn't be able to mount an organized response. It didn't work. I mean, it didn't. They shot their whole wad, and if it would have had the result they wanted, they would have rolled in there. And if they had, if it was going swimmingly, you can rest assured the Western media would be wall-to-wall coverage about the mighty IDF has rolled in there. They're showing the world that Hezbollah is a paper tiger. Those guys can't fight. Look at this. They're just rolling through liberating areas and securing a safe zone so that the Israeli settlers can come back. There is virtually zero, zilch, nada, nothing for coverage there. Why? Because they're stalled. They shot their wad. It did not soak in. I'm sure it had some effect. I'm not going to sit here and say it had no effect. But again, for their stated goal here to push them back, they've sent the ground forces in. Now, I read just the other day, they're having to send more reserves in. And they're only a short while into this, and they're already having to draw reserves in. They're calling up reserves to send in. When you're having to do that this early on in your ground invasion, that is not a good sign. That is not a good sign. I'm sure they had hoped that there would be enough chaos and confusion in the Hezbollah ranks to where they could just roll in and accomplish this. It has not happened. Now, you can't say they're not going to. They may eventually somehow. I'm skeptical that they can without calling in the U.S., but we'll see. You know, time will tell. Now, what you can do is look at past conflicts and the stated policies, the goals. Let's take, for instance, the U.S. in Vietnam. Their goal was to keep the communist faction from taking over the country of Vietnam. They lost. The U.S. lost. There's no, I have heard people try to sugarcoat this every which way. Coping, as they say. I don't really like that term. But coping. You'll hear people say, yeah, well, the U.S. won. Our heroes won every major battle that they engaged. The Vietnamese, the Viet Cong, they won every battle that they fought with the communist Vietnamese. They won every battle. It's just the politicians wouldn't let them win the war. That is bullshit. You can't separate the politicians from the war. Why? Because the war exists as a part of policy. They're trying to achieve a policy goal. The policy goal was to keep the communists from taking over Vietnam. What happened at the end? It doesn't matter that you won every fight and you napalmed hundreds of square miles of vegetation and killed however many Vietnamese that you killed. It's irrelevant. I mean, it's not irrelevant for the people, obviously, themselves. The common people always suffer in war. But it doesn't mean, well, we killed a whole lot more. We killed five of them to one of our guys. That does not matter. That is not what determines who won. We won every major engagement. It doesn't matter. What was the policy? The policy was to stop the communists from taking over Vietnam. Where are we today? The communists took over Vietnam. It doesn't matter how much of their dudes you killed. Doesn't matter how many of their buildings you blew up. Doesn't matter how much of their jungle you napalmed and sprayed or with Agent Orange. None of that matters. The U.S. government failed to achieve their stated policy goals. The war was a failure. They lost. There's no way to sugarcoat it. That other stuff does not matter. Doesn't matter how many engagements you won. Did the policy get effectively and successfully carried out? No, it did not. Now, we're basically up on time here. But you can apply this to any of these various conflicts. You can get into Israel and Iran, the U.S. and Iran. We step back and say, okay, well, what policy is each side trying to achieve? And again, forget the propaganda, the name calling, all of that other gibberish. That's for you. That's for public consumption. That's not the reality. You know, if one side would give the other side everything they want, there's no conflict. Simple as. The conflict is just a continuation of trying to achieve the policy and adding this other pressure point to it to force the other side then to concede and let you achieve your policy, which is, of course, going to be at the other side's expense. That's why the other side didn't agree to it diplomatically, because it would be to their expense. But you can always apply this to whatever you look at, and you better understand these things. People say, why aren't they just... Aren't they just wiping them out? Because that's not the policy. It's not what they're trying to do. And sometimes just wiping, quote unquote, wiping people out is detrimental to the policy, you know, that you're trying to achieve. You know, Israel, sticking with what Israel's doing, Netanyahu is really pushing his chips in hard. I think part of this is they understand that, you know, the U.S. empire is on the way out, and the U.S.'s ability to project power overseas is quickly on the way out. It's going to quickly continue to diminish, and it's kind of an all or nothing now. And it is a big gamble. It's a big gamble. I don't want to get into it too much because we don't have enough time to really delve into it. But what he's risking, this is kind of, I see this as very much a kind of an all or nothing bet. It really is. It's an all or nothing. This does not work. What he's trying to do here does not work. And I see a lot of potential failure points here. I don't see him in a real strong position here. You know, if this doesn't work, they could wind up losing much more than Israel. They could potentially completely lose Israel. I really see that as a possibility. Again, none of us know how the future is going to play out, but that is definitely on the table. They could lose the whole shebang. And depending on how it plays out and at what stage, you know, and what form the collapse of the U.S. empire ultimately takes, they could wind up with a place, you know, in a place to where there's like nowhere for them to go at all on the face of the planet. I mean, this could really go sideways. This is a really high stakes bet that is being placed here. If they win this bet or not, you know, time will tell. But when you look at any of these conflicts, again, always step back and look at what are they trying to achieve. And it has nothing to do with how many bombs get dropped. It's if the policy gets carried out. Like I said, if you look at Vietnam, it doesn't matter how many tons of bombs they dropped. The policy was to keep the communist faction from taking over the country, and that failed. So they lost. It didn't matter how many people they killed. It didn't matter how many buildings they leveled. What's the policy? And then by this, you gauge ultimately which side is the winner and which side is the loser. We're going to wrap up on that note. I hope you have a great weekend. I plan to be back here Monday for the Monday installment of the Daily Nationalist. If you haven't had a chance, be sure and check out our entire week of content we've had up this week. You don't want to miss any of it, if I do say so myself. So again, hope you have a great weekend. Hope we'll see you next week. Keep the faith, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.